I love final week. For me, it's that shot of energy that we need sometimes. It changes the whole energy.
Hi, welcome to Resonate, conversations and life lessons from Rancho La Puerta. As always, I'm your host, Barry. Today's podcast is extra special because I'm going to be interviewing four different people. These four are part of 15 presenters that are going to be sharing their skills, gifts, and passions at our annual family camp this year. It starts July 25th. Today, I'll be interviewing a chess master, a circus artist, a Bollypop dancer, and our very own organic garden chef. Can't wait to hear what they have to say. Hi, Alex. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Barry.
So you're going to be one of our presenters at this upcoming Family Week, which starts July 25th. And you've presented before at Family Week, right?
That's right, a bunch of times. This will be my fifth or sixth time.
Your super popular thing that you present is chess here at Rancho La Puerta. So, but I kind of want to ask you about, you had a career in finance, and then you left that career to become a high school math teacher.
That is true.
What caused that to happen?
Oh, boy. Well, I guess I love working with people, which I guess I did in finance a little bit, but I love sharing new ideas, and I get excited about math and I don't know, games in general, which I try to share with students. I love puzzles. So, you know, it's just the ability to have a job where I'm helping other people, you know, grow and get excited about things makes my job wonderful every day. So I still love it after 25 years or so. So yeah, it's pretty great.
Well, I was going to ask you how long you've been teaching. What are the math subjects that you teach?
All of it. I've taught pretty much every high school math class up to and including calculus, AP calculus, AP statistics. Yeah.
Okay. So, and how did chess come into your life?
Oh, boy. I didn't learn chess until I was about 20 years old. I was in college, and my girlfriend found a chess class that was taught by some other students. And she said, Alex, you want to learn how to play chess? I was like, sure, let's give it a try. Mm-hmm. And from day one, I was just hooked. I don't know why, but I think it's just like a puzzle that's constantly evolving. And it just, I don't know. I got really excited about it from very early on. And it's just been a passion of mine. And I still love it. And I love sharing with people. And that's why I love doing it at the ranch.
It's interesting because in junior high and eighth grade, my math teacher, every Friday, we played chess. That
no
was our
way.
Class. Yeah, every Friday he had us play chess because he thought it taught us so many skills that we needed.
I love that. And let me ask you this. Do you have good memories or bad memories of it?
I have really good memories of it. Yeah. I mean, I just remember in high school that my brother would always beat me. So when he would get really close to beating me, I'd upset the board because I was a sore loser. But on social media, I found out you call yourself a chess patzer. And I looked at that word because I didn't know what it is. It's a German word that means unskilled. You're an unskilled chess player.
Yeah, I mean,
how can that be true? No,
I'll clarify that a little bit. So patzer is like, that's actually a very good definition. It's like an unskilled. It almost has a connotation of somebody who like thinks they're good, but they're not really that good, and they kind of futz around with the game. I have studied chess a lot. I've had chess coaches. I've read numerous, countless books. I've been part of study groups. I still study chess to this day. And for all of that time learning chess, I probably should be a little bit better than I am, you know, so I don't compete as much as I should, you know. But I do love playing. I mean, I'm pretty accomplished. I worked with a lot of people. I've won my fair share of games. So, you know, maybe I'm a little humble about it. And I don't want people to think like I'm like a world champion level because I'm not. Right. I love studying and learning from those grandmasters, those real pros. I'm not one of them, but I love teaching and I love sharing, and I'm good at communicating chess ideas to people.
Are young people really into chess these days?
You have no idea. It's it's crazy how much enthusiasm there is, you know, and especially in a war, in a day where students have screens in their pockets and they have video games at, you know, in every corner of their life. I see more and more students just wanting to play chess. They pull out a chessboard at lunch. Even if they're on their phones, they're playing chess against their friends. It's gotten really popular in the past, I don't know, 5 years. So it's really nice to see, because it's one of these sort of, you know, low tech, exciting things that students are getting into. So more and more, especially middle school and early high school, I'm seeing a bunch of enthusiasm.
Well, I think, I don't know how many years ago, but that movie, The Queen's Gambit, came out. And it was all about chess. And it suddenly, I think it helped her research chess.
Oh, sure. Big time. So I also run the Rockland County Chess Club. I founded it about 10 years ago. It's my local chess club. And, you know, we started out pretty slow and had steady increase in membership. But once that TV show came out, our numbers like doubled overnight practically. People were just wanting to learn about chess and wanting to play.
Right.
So I'm glad that we're giving them sort of a forum to do that.
What do you think are some of the skills or benefits of playing chess?
That's a great question. Open for a lot of debate. But what I see for kids especially, it's developing patience, kind of dealing with impulse control, and kind of like taking a pause, you know, and saying, okay, if I do this, what is my opponent going to do? You know, and they actually have to be very deliberate with their thinking. I'm not going to make a claim like, you know, makes students better at school or anything like that, or makes people smarter. I don't know if that's true, but one thing I do see is the ability to think slower, more critically, more thoroughly.
I think for sure critical thinking and also strategy.
That's a great point. I agree with you.
So when you're at the ranch during family week, our ages go during family week from 7 all the way up to 19. You're still. So do you have all those ages that come to your classes?
No, I have much more. It starts at 7, and in the evenings we also have social chess. So every age is welcome to come to our evening sessions, which we do, I think, 4 consecutive nights. We usually do it Sunday through Wednesday. I mean, that's to be determined. But those evenings are packed. And the beautiful thing about it is so intergenerational, right? You have, you have 7-year-olds playing against 70-year-olds. And they love it. People love coming together because it's just this, like, you know, I don't know what the word is, but this level playing field, right? Yeah. Doesn't matter how old you are, doesn't matter who you are, your gender or anything. We're playing chess, and it's everyone knows the rules, you know, and everyone can play against each other. And the people that come to the chess lesson, sometimes they'll do lectures and share some chess ideas with people, and that draws people of all ages as well.
Do you teach novice never? Before played chess players, and then you teach advanced players too?
Absolutely. So we teach so pure beginners. So the nice thing is I come with my children, Max and Stella, and they're now 15 years old, and they help me teach. And they are wonderful and so patient with some of the true novices, and they'll teach people from square one. So will I. I'll work with people, especially in those evenings, that want that one-on-one attention. And then the other thing I really like to do is not only teach somebody the moves, but say, hey, if you want to continue learning, here are some resources you can use. So there's books or websites that I'll recommend so that they can go home and continue on their journey.
That's great. Yeah. You know, there's so much talk these days about longevity and brain health, especially. And, you know, chess isn't necessarily always mentioned, but it seems like it would be something that would be really good for a person's brain as they get older, because every game is different. You have to strategize differently. Even though the pieces move the same way, it's always a new game. And I've seen people that will I'll go to my friend's house. He has one of those big fancy chess things, you know, that they pay way too much money for. Yep. But I'll be like, what's going on here? Oh, like, we're going to come back to that in 2 days. So you just leave it and you come back to it and you have to refresh your mind and rethink it.
For sure.
Super cool.
Very little memorization is possible. You know, at the very high levels, these professionals try to memorize a lot. But that's the beautiful thing. You know, every chess game is so, just like you said, is so different. And, you know, it's a new problem you have to solve. So I love it for that reason.
Do you guys have tournaments here at the ranch?
We did. Last year we had our first tournament, and it was great. Everyone came in the evening and played one game per night. And depending on who won or lost, the next day we would pair people differently. Mm-hmm. And by the end of 4 days, we had a winner.
You had a champion. How old was the champion?
A teenager. I don't know the exact, something like 15 or 16, but
yeah.
Let me tell you, there are very strong chess players at every age at the ranch. I'm always
impressed. That's so awesome. That's cool.
Really cool.
We look forward to having you here. That's super exciting. So again, you have Family Week, July 25th. So I look forward to having you. Thanks for spending the time with us today.
Barry, always a pleasure to talk to you. Okay.
Hi, Akansha. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Barry. Thank you.
I appreciate it. And you're here teaching this week. But what's great is you're going to be here for Family Week this year, which is July 25th. And tell us what you're going to be teaching here.
I will be here for Family Week teaching a few different Indian dance styles. My training is in Indian classical, Bharatnatyam style. Mm-hmm. And we'll be doing folk dances from different parts of India, which are a lot of fun. Folk dances are to celebrate different festivals. So we'll be dancing with scarves, with sticks, and dancing with partners. So a lot of fun.
And you teach something that you actually kind of coined the term Bali Pop.
That's right.
Where does that come from?
Bali Pop is me bringing together my two worlds. I grew up in India, and now I live in California.
Okay.
So it's the traditional Indian dancing combined with the pop modern culture and the hottest playlist. So I bring it together to make dance more accessible, more fun for all ages and all levels. So it's like a dance party where you come and you're moving along with the instructor. We're getting your steps in, and you're discovering a different culture through my dance and through the lens of music.
So do you use different styles of music in each class, or does each class have its own particular flavor? Like one class has all Indian style music and one has like more pop music from the US, or how does that work?
The playlist comprises of music from around the world.
Oh,
so
cool.
We have Bollywood music, or we also have Latin flavor and some belly dance music, do some hip hop, salsa. So it's bringing all the different flavors together.
Right. And you said, what kind of music is it from India? It's called
Bollywood.
Bollywood. So what does that term mean? What kind of music is that exactly? Because I hear that all the time.
Sure. Just like the movie industry of America, which is Hollywood, okay. The movie industry in India is Bollywood.
Oh, that's cool. I never knew that. That's great.
And we have a few different movie industries within India, actually. Mm-hmm. Bollywood is one of the biggest. There's also Tollywood. So depending on the language,
right?
But Bollywood is these big, big movies with lots of dance sequences and songs, and we tell stories through these songs.
Right.
That's the music I'll be using in my classes.
And how long have you been teaching dance?
I started teaching when I was in high school. I was living in India then. I started training when I was 7 years old. And then I moved to America 12 years back, and I started Bali Khan.
And you've always loved dance then?
Yeah.
What has made you love dance so much? Because, I mean, I watched your class here at the ranch this week, and it's all adults this week, but it's packed. It's completely full, and everyone is smiling and having such a great time.
Yeah, it's actually bad. I think dance is the easiest way to de-stress. And, you know, once you enter the dance space, the studio, you forget about what's going on outside.
Right.
Now, living in LA, there's a lot of traffic. There's a lot of challenges in the world out there right now with everything going on politically. And I think I don't know what people are going through in their homes or their world. So when they enter the dance space and the music is there and the good energy that, you know, just is shared energy in the room, that's the best part about the dance class.
What is it like to have different ages of people in your class?
Oh, it's so fun. It's so fun. And my favorite part was the talent show at the end of the Family Week, the last night, uh-huh. when I had different groups perform together. And I wasn't sure the adults would be down to perform uh-huh. or if they would be intimidated, but they were the most excited. And I had men, women, all ages, little kids perform together.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, do you still go back and teach in India as well?
I do.
So who do you teach in India, and how does that work?
Yeah, I spend around 2 months in India every year around Christmas, New Year's time. I spend time with my family in Delhi, and then I work at a nonprofit in Gujarat, which is in the western part of India.
Okay.
And it's a nonprofit that works with hundreds and thousands of children in different neighborhoods. These are underprivileged children who don't have as much access to arts as we have. And I travel there and work with them, and sometimes even take children from LA to go with me
and do
an exchange. So yeah, I spend some time there, and I also work with some dancers in Rajasthan. practicing a folk dance style called Kalbelia, which is a very rare dance style in America. I guess like five dancers you practice that. And I learned that and share that with my students here.
And so you teach it in LA too, that same style?
Exciting.
Wow. So like how many classes do you teach a week?
Then I'm 20 classes.
20 classes a week. Wow. That's so cool. And tell me some of the, besides the talent here at the ranch, what else do you like about being here family week?
I love the energy everywhere. It was like, especially the art classes, the little ones and parents, grandparents, everyone painting together. I did a mirror class last year, and it was such a cool process. We were learning from each other how a teenage brain works and how, you know, older people, they bear wisdom to the art. So I really love everyone coming together and sharing a space.
Yeah. I feel like that that art and music feed the soul and bring people together. So do you feel that way too? And I feel like in this world, we need that more than ever, right? And I love that you're bringing dancers from all over the world into one venue. And, you know, we're all the same.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It bridges the gap. It's like the language of the song doesn't matter. It's not just a language of music. They need to connect. And yeah, it's fun to be silly together and to share something. Then we understand our Taj a little bit better.
So can anyone do your class?
Yeah.
Do you have to be like you know, really good at choreography or?
No, it's a beginner level class. A lot of people walk in say, I have two left feet and I cannot do this. And then they walk out of the class feeling much better because it's not intimidating at all. It's really easy to follow along with the instructor and you feel good.
Right. I think that music and actually moving with the music does feed your soul. So that's awesome. And I'm so glad. I read that you said that you got into dance because you wanted to spread happiness.
That is my goal.
To spread happiness. Yeah. Well, what better thing to spread, right? That's so awesome. So we're super excited to have you here for Family Week for the second time. And I know that if Family Week is any at all like this week, your classes are going to be so packed and so fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to bring some new songs and new choreography to the Family Week this year and some new costumes even for the talent.
Oh, that's cool. I'm going to definitely come to the talent show. Thank you so much. I hope you are finding today's podcast informative and enjoyable. If you wish to learn more about our exciting presenters and programs, visit our events calendar on the Rancho La Porra website and see what's coming up in the future. Make sure to mention the podcast when making a reservation. Now back to... I hope you are enjoying today's podcast as much as I am. To learn more about our wonderful presenters and exciting weeks coming up at the ranch, go to rancholaporta.com and check out our events calendar. Make sure to mention the podcast when making your reservation to take advantage of a special offer. Some restrictions may apply. Today's interview. Hi, Chef Vivian. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Mary. Thank you for inviting me.
So you are the head chef at over at our cooking school, La Cucina Kikanta, right? Which is located in our beautiful organic garden.
Yes, right? Tres Estrellas. Yes.
Right. But you, the ranch is an amazing place because there's generations of people that work here. And you're one of those people, right? So how did you come to the ranch?
I started working at the juice bar. That was my first position here. I started like after COVID kind of thing. I had to reopen the juice bar in that moment. So it was really fun part of my career here. I was in the juice bar for 1 year and a half almost. And then with the transition of Chef Reina to La Cocina Que Canta, I was moved to the dining hall as a sous chef in that time, and I stayed there for 3 years. So then the opportunity to come to La Cocina Que Canta was another thing, and I took it. And it was like a gift for me, really, because it's just amazing to as a chef to be able to work in an organic garden, to work with people that care about the land, the soil, the whole foods. And in this time of the world, you know, like when you need to take care a lot, what you eat, what you are putting in your bodies, and very aligned to what I've been learning working in the ranch as a wellness resort, because it changed my life in a way of wellness, of course.
Right. And your father works here too, right?
Yeah, my dad works here. He is a driver in the front desk, Arturo. If you see him, say hi. He works here and he's ready to retire in a few months. So we are very excited.
So you're the second generation.
I'm the second generation. Yeah.
We have Family Week coming up, which is our 15th annual Family Week, and you have worked 5 other Family Weeks, right? So tell me, what do you love about Family Week?
Well, I love Family Week. I love the kids. I mean, I've seen them grow throughout 5 years now. It's amazing for me every year to see them taller and taller and just like bigger and more. They're so smart. They're so into wellness. I mean, they know more than I do. They teach me a lot. When I used to be at the juice bar, they will be like, oh, you should make this smoothie. You should add this superfood to your smoothies. Right. Or they will suggest things. Actually, we have a smoothie that it's a recipe for one of the kids. The protein smoothie we have at the juice bar is from one of the kids. Yeah.
One of the kids from Family Week. That's so awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
So you teach cooking classes for our guests out at the cooking school.
Yes.
Do you also teach cooking classes for the kids during Family Week?
Well, I used to teach them the smoothie cooking class, like the class of smoothie, how to make a proper smoothie, the elements of a healthy smoothie. But right now, since I've been knowing these kids for 5 years, so I'm trying to bring something special for them this Family Week. I want to do a fun class for them. We want to make a fiesta for them too, as well. And so there is a lot of surprises for them this year.
Do you find they come out to the organic garden and they love the garden and they love seeing where their food comes from?
I think so. I mean, they're really intelligent kids, and they're very interested in their food. And I've seen that throughout the years, because they always ask, what kind of milk are you using in your smoothie? Or what kind of ingredients? Or is that protein vegan? Or, their knowledge is just like beyond.
It's really cool. I find that really refreshing too, how engaged they are in about sustainability and the environment and all the things the ranch cares about. They tend to care about that too.
Yeah, so. And what they eat.
What is a fiesta? You mentioned you're going to have a fiesta for the kids. What is that?
I want them to live like a fiesta that we used to live as kids here in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
That in school, you will have a kermes, that it's like a fiesta in your school. And you will have like stands of food, like street food. But we'll do like healthy street food for them. So maybe like elote and some paletas and, I mean, healthy snack for them, music and a piñata.
That sounds super fun.
Yeah.
During Family Week, is the food kind of traditional ranch food, or do we tweak it a little to make kids happy?
I want to make kids happy, of course.
But so we're eating. It's still healthy, right?
It's still healthy. I'm doing recipes that usually will be really nice for them, but more healthy for them also.
So can you give me an example?
For example, we are doing a waffle from sweet potato. So no wheat. It's only baked sweet potato with some cheese. You put that in the waffle maker and that's it. It comes like really crisp. And then you can eat that either savory or sweet. So you can add maybe some fruit on top and then some cottage cheese for more protein, or you can do like avocado toast with that, like you can do that with some avocado and some fried egg or a hard-boiled egg or something like that. And I know right now that protein intake, it's really important for them, because last year it was a conversation for them, like getting more tuna, getting more protein in their meals, and they do a lot of activities throughout the day, so they need good food, they need good whole foods for them to be active and feel good throughout all the week.
Yeah, I noticed too that We have a large contingency of teenagers that are coming now because they started when they were young and now they're teenagers and they keep coming back every year. But out at the Bazaar del Sol, which is kind of, you know, we have a coffee and wine out there, but they kind of take that over, that area over sometimes. And now we do mocktails for them, right?
As I say, I mean, they're really into wellness. I mean, they know a lot. They read about it. They know how many protein intake they should take. So they are aware that sometimes they need more. So they ask for it. And we need to be ready for that because it's part of our service. And I mean, I love to see them enjoy food. It's just like I will have like my little brothers or even my cousins or family. It's really special for me.
You're in the right job then if you're a chef who likes to see people enjoy food. That's the right place for you to be. Do you have any special memories of past family weeks?
I mean, Zachary is one of the kids that invented the protein smoothie that it's one of the most popular smoothies in the juice bar. And then, I mean, seeing the kids when I was at the dining hall and wait for me and the door of the dining hall just to say hi. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, they take the time to say hi. And as for my quesadillas, even though there are the same quesadillas that anyone will make, but they're like, no, I want Vivian's quesadillas. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I will make it for you. And I mean, that's, for me, it's pretty special. Yeah.
No, it's super special. And I mean, I think one of the reasons they're so in touch with what they're eating, organics and exercises, because their parents and grandparents are the people that are bringing them, and they're people that come to the ranch on a regular basis as well. So it's just like extending the good lifestyle to the next generation. And I think that's one of the points of our family week, is for us to like educate the young people as they come up. So we'll have a healthier environment, a healthier world, healthier people.
I love family week. I know for some people it might be overwhelming in some point. Like, we never get kids running around. But for me, it's that shot of energy that we need sometimes in the ranch. It changes the whole energy in the whole ranch. I mean, it's, you can feel it. And it's very excited for me, and I'm very happy to have them back and now receive them in La Cocina Que Canta. So it's going to be really fun.
We're all looking forward to it. And thanks for taking this time to spend with me today. And we'll see you all at Family Week.
Yes, I'll see all of you.
Hey, Matt, thanks for joining me today. Appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to visit with us for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Thanks so you're one of our presenters at Family Week this year that starts July 25th. Reading through your bio, it's kind of crazy. 25 years circus artist, 4 years Chicago policeman. You're a professional auctioneer. You have a podcast. And in 2020, you started a farm animal sanctuary.
That is all correct.
And what will you be doing at the ranch?
So I'll be doing a presentation at some point talking about all of these very exciting careers I've had. But I will primarily be there teaching circus classes. So anything from juggling, balancing objects like feathers and plates, and then human acrobatic balancing things. So somebody wants to stand on my shoulders or the shoulders of someone else that is able to do that, we will absolutely work on all those things.
So how did you get interested in being a circus artist?
Yeah, so I grew up doing theater, musical theater as a kid, and a friend's mom said, hey, you know, I know you also do magic and juggling, stuff like that. There's this brand new French circus called Cirque Olé coming to town, and this was in the early 90s, and it was Cirque du Soleil, and I went and saw that show and realized that was exactly what I wanted to do with my life, and so I spent the next couple of years in high school kind of focusing more on becoming a circus performer, leaned more heavily into acrobatics and learning kind of the physical skills. And then when I was graduating high school, I applied to the National Circus School in Montreal, Canada, It is kind of the, I'll say, the Juilliard of circus schools. It really is the best in the world. It is currently now located right across the street from Cirque du Soleil. So you could go from circus school one day to, you know, make a right into that parking lot. And the next day you make a left into the parking lot at Cirque du Soleil, where you've got a career. And yeah, I spent 25 years doing circus performing. I worked on cruise ships. I did theater shows. So continue doing, you know, theater and musical theater and acting, commercial acting, whatever, you know, whatever would pay the bills. But yeah, I just absolutely love circus. And it was always, you know, I was always Matt the Clown or Circus Matt or, right. You know, just that to all my friends' kids and mostly to my friends too. So
I can remember growing up circuses coming to town.
Yeah.
I don't see that as much anymore. Is it still something that's happening?
It's a little smaller for sure. You know, back in the day, you know, back in the day, it was, you know, traveling by train and, you know, mm-hmm. Ringling and the companies around that time would travel in train cars and there would be a huge procession going from the train tracks to wherever they were performing at. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before the internet, before TV, you know, before radio in many senses, you know, the only way you could see it is if you saw the flyer hanging in the town and, you know, the guy who would come in beforehand would hang those posters. You would then find out on this day, everyone, school would stop, business would stop and everyone would go down because this might be your only opportunity in your entire life to go see an elephant, a giraffe, an emu, a monkey, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And it was walking through your town. So, yeah, nowadays it's much smaller. There's a lot fewer circuses with animals mm-hmm. and, you know, a lot of it is, you know, like even Cirque du Soleil, it travels. It's mostly a truck and bus sort of a thing. They, you know, they travel that way from city to city and they will, yeah. You know, they'll set up and do a show for a month. But most, you know, smaller tents might be in town for a weekend or 2 weeks. So,
yeah, I know I used to love to watch the trapeze artists and they're at some of the Cirque shows now, too. Some of the water shows have a lot of trapeze people. So
no, and it's very cool. You know, a lot of what Cirque du Soleil actually hires are gymnasts. So, yeah. You know, they're kind of, it's a lot easier to for them. They feel like with what they're trying to do to turn a gymnast into an artist as opposed to an artist into a gymnast.
So after 25 years doing that, you moved to Chicago and became a policeman?
So I had actually moved to Chicago in 2003. I moved there to take improv classes, thought I would be there for about 6 months. And after 3 years, realized, hey, I got to live somewhere. So decided to kind of put roots down in Chicago. Continued, as I said, doing theater, doing a lot of circuses. But, you know, one of the things I realized about the circus was to have kind of a successful career, you really have to be traveling constantly. And a lot of the things I love doing root me at home. So things like gardening, taking care of animals. So I ended up doing a lot more, you know, fundraising events, special events, things like that, where it was, you know, a charity event, a gala, or, you know, a lot of country clubs, bar mitzvahs, things like that. So, you know, the money was good, but it wasn't necessarily, you know, screaming to me as a passion. So right. I thought, hey, you know what? I need more people in the United States to understand what the circus that I love is. So I actually, with some friends, put together and started a circus festival in Chicago. The idea was to share contemporary circus that, you know, most people know of Ringling Brothers or Cirque du Soleil. They don't understand there's just this incredible, gorgeous art that occurs around the rest of the world that may look nothing like either of those, but still uses the skills. So started that out in 2013, did that for about 4 years and got completely frustrated, burnt out, you know, and kind of go into it when I do my talk. But I was just looking for something else to do. I was like, you know what? I think this chapter in my life is kind of put a pin in it and find something else to do. And I had met some friends who were police officers who would always joke, you know, you're exactly what the department wants. And I'm like, you're insane. And they said, no, seriously, they want somebody who can talk to people and engage people. The fact that you speak three languages, you know, circus school, I learned French. I had been learning Spanish in high school. So, you know, completely fluent in French, relatively fluent in Spanish. You know, it was great. Not that there were a lot of French speakers in Chicago, but there are a lot of Spanish speakers, you know, and visitors. So I took the police entrance exam, went through the physical exam, and I got into the academy 3 weeks before I turned 40 and spent 4 years working as a cop in the Wrigley Field and Boys Town area. And it was mostly, as I like to say, I was an adult recess monitor with a gun and a badge. A lot of what I dealt with was the same thing when, you know, when you're a kid or when your kid gets in trouble at school, they go to the principal's office and the principal decides whether it's, you know, is it an hour of detention or is it expulsion? Mm-hmm. And in, you know, in adult terms, that is, are you either going to lock up and being released to go see a judge later who probably is going to let you go with a pat on the wrist? Or is it, no, this is your 40th arrest and you're going to jail / prison. So, you know, similar job, just different outcomes. So.
What possessed you to move to California and start?
At the time we started, we just had a small backyard garden, and I was reading magazines about homesteading and, you know, thought it would be amazing to have my own organic garden. Well, how do you do that? You get some chickens and you feed them organic feed, and then you use their organic, you know, poop as manure in your garden. And so we got free chickens, and there's a thing called chicken math. You buy three chickens in a tiny little coop, or in our case, we adopted three chickens from a friend who, you know, could no longer take care of them. And you have a small coop. One of the chickens ended up passing away a few months later. So we went to the store, bought three more chickens. Well, now we have five chickens, but the coop is too small. So you build a bigger coop. Well, now there's more space for more chickens. Mm-hmm. And slowly but surely, you build bigger coops and take on more chickens. And then you're moving back to California. We ended up buying 12 acres. Not far from where we live, actually. Amazingly, there's still acreage available in Silicon Valley. And we have 270 farm animals we take care of: horses, alpaca, goats, pigs, chickens, ducks, geese, dogs, cats, rabbits. Right. I mean, a little bit of everything. A miniature donkey named Timmy.
Are these animals all rescues?
Yeah. So a lot of them are more just, you know, hey, we can no longer take care of them. We really do try and focus on abuse, neglect, and abandonment first and foremost. Thankfully, in our area, at least there's not as much of that. I'm sure if we were in a lot closer to farmland or dedicated mm-hmm. farmland, you'd see a little more of that. But yeah, everything basically needs a home. We haven't bought, and the only animals we've actually bought, I can say, are the livestock guardian dogs we have. And those are basically, you know, we like to say our only paid employees. And they eat very well, and they sleep all day, and they bark all night. That is their job. So
do people adopt these animals from you? Or
no, so we also, that's part of it, right? You see this a lot of times in the rescue world, how, in dogs especially, somebody gets a dog from the shelter, it doesn't work out, so they return it, and then it goes to a new home and they return it. We want to be the forever home for these animals. So okay. We have to make the decision that, you know, the animal we're taking in, that we're going to be able to house, that we could do it safely for that animal, for all the other animals of its breed or type, and then that it's going to work well with the rest of the critters. So, it's everyone, you know, some of them are pretty easy. If it's a healthy egg-laying hen, sure, no problem. If it's an old, you know, healthy hen, no problem. If it's something that has a horrible communicable disease or virus, there's, you know, not a whole lot we can do with that, because it's just going to compromise what we do. So we try and do as much as we can to, you know, kind of follow the American Zoological Association standards. But, you know, we're not accredited in any way. We love animals. We take good care of them. Right. And at the end of the day, we just want to give a home to anything that needs it. So
I'm going to definitely come to your talk. It's going to be super interesting. You have so many different transitions in your life, and all of them seem great. So, but for the kids here during Family Week, you'll be doing mostly circus stuff then?
Yeah. So circus. So we, you know, if you've never juggled before, we start out with scarves. That's a real easy way to do it. And you master the one scarf throw, then you get to two scarves and three scarves, really quickly transition into one ball, two ball, three ball juggling. And, you know, some people, they get it within 5 minutes. Some people, it takes three or four sessions. It's just, you know, everyone's different. We also have things, you know, if you're trying something new or different, balancing a feather on your hand. It's a peacock feather, or, spinning plates. We have Diablos. A lot of different juggling toys, essentially. And then we'll do some partner acrobatics. So maybe standing on the knees of somebody and doing a counterbalance, or, you know, depending on the base, I might be the base for a lot of people. Or we'll do pyramids where, you know, we have a base of four, base of three, you know, two, four, three, two, one. We're there to have fun. I mean, going back to all the careers I had, I was just talking to somebody about this earlier, you know, what's the through line? And we really identified that it's connecting with people. I love connecting with people. Right. So whether it's through juggling or, you know, talking about their life story or my life story, I love being with people. And it's really, you'd be surprised, you know, from last year, the amount of adults who came to the classes was so fun, because it was, you know, they would go to drop off their kid and they were like, wait a minute, can I try this? I'm like, absolutely. And I ended up having, I think, as many adults in the classes where they were allowed as there were kids. And at the end of the week, we had the big fun party by the poolside, and, you know, there were people putting on little juggling shows themselves, and it was just great. See grandparents hanging out with the grandkids and mom and dad, and, there were some people there where the dad and the son were juggling. And so just, it's fun. I mean, it's a way to connect with people and have a good time, learn something new.
That's awesome. Well, I can't wait to have you here. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a really fun summer.
No, looking forward to being back.
I'll see you Family Week then. Thanks for spending this time with me.
Thanks, Barry.
Pleasure. Today's podcast got me super excited about our upcoming Family Week. With so many amazing presenters, classes, presentations, and activities, it's bound to be a magical week. Join us the week of July 25th when we welcome families with children 7 and older for a fun week full of camp activities. Some of those activities include hiking, fitness, cooking classes, arts and crafts, fiestas, fun in the sun in our mini swimming pools, and so much more. Come together as a family and enjoy delicious meals, group sing-alongs, talent shows, and many other family-friendly events. Mark your calendar. Personally, for me, Family Week is one of my favorite times of the year at Rancho La Puerta. Until I see you again, wishing you health and much joy with those you love.